Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Code and the Coding Coders Who Code It. I'm your host, Drew Bragg, and joined with me today is the first ever repeat guest for the show, Andrew Mason. Andrew, for those who are unfamiliar with you or didn't listen to your first episode, could you give us a brief introduction?
Yes. Hello, everyone. My name is Andrew Mason. I am a senior product developer at Podia, where I write Ruby on Rails and a lot of Hotwire and Turbo and all sorts of fun stuff like that. I am the co-host of Remote Ruby and the Ruby for All podcasts, and I am the co-editor of the Ruby Radar newsletter. And yeah, I guess I do stuff.
Can do a lot of stuff. All right. So you definitely know how this goes, having been on the show before. But if this is anyone else's first time listening to the show, the way this is going to work is I'm going to ask Andrew three questions. What are you working on? What blockers do you have? If you don't have a current blocker, what's a recent blocker you had and how did you solve it? And then what's something cool, new, or interesting you want to share? So because we can talk for hours, let's just dive right in. Andrew, what are you working on?
Yeah, I'm working on two main things that are abstract enough I can discuss them completely. Number one, this is the thing I am not supposed to be spending my time on, ish. Like, this is partially my responsibility in the terms of, like, at Podia, I am kind of in charge of DX, as in developer experience. So anything that can improve the developer's life, that's my kind of side responsibility, which I love because I love building tools. That's when I find myself the most happiest. But the other thing that I'll mention in a second is what I should be doing and should be focusing on. But I don't know about you, but whenever there's like something really important happening, that's when I get this like itch deep in my soul. And it's like, hey, that thing, you know, you've been ignoring, all of a sudden it's kind of looking cool. We already had the plans for it. And then you go right back down the rabbit hole. So I am trying to refactor. And when I say trying, I mean, I have not written a line of code. Let me tell you, I have done so much research, so many notes spanning back months. To this point, I could have written this over and over again, but our CI and GitHub Actions takes a little too long, not even remotely long compared to some places I've worked. So it's not like an outlandish, unmanageable amount of time, but it's just high enough that it would be better if this was faster. And I think what is driving that is my knowledge of how much faster I can make it. I know how much faster I can make it, and I'm seeing how long it takes now. I'm like, holy crap, I think I could cut this time in half, maybe even more. And that would then open up other opportunities to do other things that we want to do, like expanding like the capabilities of our CI workflow and doing more DXC type things and doing more static analysis type things that are like fun and helpful, but not a priority when the tests take too long. So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Well, you know what they say, or someone said, I think, that the best programs are created when the developer was supposed to be working on something else, or the best code is written, the developer is supposed to be working on something else. So sounds like you're primed to make a very fast CI suite since you're supposed to be working on something else, but you want to work on this thing. That's always my motivation for something is like, what do I want to be working on? That's the thing that's going to get the beautiful, wonderful code, is the stuff I want to do.
Yeah. Because that attention, though, is very fickle. Because what I want to do right now is not what I wanted to do last week or the week before or the week before that. But the week before that, I was super down to do it. So it's one of those comes in waves kind of things.
Yeah, a lot of half-baked projects in my backlog.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that is the CI. The DX stuff is sort of what you're working on. And I feel you on that. I do always enjoy getting to write tools that help the developers enjoy working a little bit more. What are you supposed to be working on?
I'll tell you what I'm supposed to be working on right after I tell you the fact that I have never met another person like this. I love working on CI. That's it. No discussion. There is no discussion to be had because it's not even like a same thing to say, but like I weirdly love working on CIs. Anyway, what I'm supposed to be working on, I am transitioning into more of a developer project leader, because I don't want to say developer manager, because that's not what I'm doing. But typically, what I prefer to do is be what I call a code monkey, where you throw things at the bars and I grab it and I do it and then I throw it back to you and I'm done with it. What comes in and out of my cage, that's all that exists to me. Notoriously, I'm very bad at planning, very bad at estimating. I am either a chronic overestimator or chronic underestimator. There is no in between. I am not the greatest communicator in the world because sometimes I like to noodle on a project for like a whole day straight and get 4 days worth of work done. You know, some days nothing happens. You know, there's nothing happening upstairs. No lights are on. But I am transitioning into more of a planner type role where I am responsible for planning out and writing up like the tasks and the descriptions of the work and doing discovery, working with our UI person, working with the people who are envisioning what this thing will be. And then I am working with, to me, side by side with another developer who I haven't gotten to work with yet. So that's been a lot of fun. But we are working together on that. And I am in, kind of in charge of all of the not fun stuff. The meeting agendas and the end of week reports and the updates and the freaking base camp, dude. I hate base camp. I really don't like base camp. And if you ask me why, there's multiple reasons, but the very first one, no markdown. Come on, it's 2023, people. I thought we moved on. I thought we were better than this.
I'm with you. Anytime something doesn't have a markdown editor, I'm like, wish number one, if I could ask you to build features for me, it would be a markdown editor. And everything I do is a markdown. So it just makes sense to me, or at least have some way of easily converting.
Yes, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the fact that like in an app like Craft, for example, I type markdown, it formats it as whatever I have typed. So if I do ## for header, it automatically turns into a header in the document. And I can copy as markdown. Thank you. Very based of you. But in Basecamp, I have to like write all the stuff where I want to write it. And then I have to run this obscure shortcut that I built to turn it into rich text so that I can then paste it into Basecamp and not have it. Oh my God, I'm getting mad just thinking about it.
Well, so to avoid you getting mad, we'll go to a different topic that'll probably make you maybe mad. I don't know. So for someone who admittedly is not a great planner, great estimator, great at, I don't know, all the things that you're essentially responsible for doing now.
Yes.
How are you managing that? How are you going and saying, I'm not great at planning and now I need to plan. So this is how I'm going to approach that challenge.
A few ways. At this point, it's probably just a bad habit, but I make sure everyone has very low expectations. This is a thing that I do in all aspects of my life that I have done. It's definitely because I have ADHD and I'm a chronic underachiever, but I'm just like, everyone, this is my first project. I'm not good at this. I am trying. If there's something I'm not doing well, let me know so that I can correct it immediately because I will not pick up on hints. And I'm always asking, like after I post a meeting agenda, I'll be like, hey, was this okay? Like I'll send it to someone. I'll send it to my manager. I'll send it to Jason. I'll be like, hey, like, what did you think about the way I led that meeting? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? The other part is like finding that groove with like the people you're working with, because now I know that my partner has my back and like I have her back. So I feel like safe in that team because I feel like we are unified and that we can do it. I don't know. I feel like I can do anything at some points. Whether or not I can do it now is usually no. But if I have someone really good working beside me, I can do crazy amounts of work. So I feel secure in that aspect of knowing that even though at this exact moment right now, I don't know how we're going to finish on time. I don't know how I'm going to do this one part of the project. It's one part of the project I'm freaking out about because it's a massive amount of refactoring. There's a lot of moving parts, this and that, and this and that. I'm not even thinking about that right now because I know I'll figure it out because I always do. Because I have faith in my teammate, I know that we will figure it out and that we will probably deliver on time, if not early. And I'm just going to be freaking out about it the whole time. But you ask me, how do I actually manage it? And that's by some days I have complete and utter meltdowns about it. And then other days, I don't.
Yeah, some days are better than others.
I just ride those days as hard as I can.
Yeah, I have noticed that the more flexible my schedule is, as far as I have, hey, you just need to get X done by this date, the more I try to really say, okay, I'm going to work for X amount of hours on this day and then this day and then this day and like really try and plan it out, I'm always struggling to either be motivated at that time or something. But if I just say, okay, I know when it needs to get done and just try to ride the waves of productivity and say, hey, today was not a productive day, but tomorrow will be, or hey, it's 1 a.m, I'm feeling productive, whatever, I just jump on. That has been the greatest part about the remote work / just flexible schedule thing, is it works so well for my ADHD. Is, hey, I'm rocking and rolling today, getting lots done. Today I'm not productive at all and my manager doesn't care. She's like, I know you're going to get it done, so go for it.
Yeah, that's part of kind of what I was saying. Like, I worded it the way I worded it, but that's kind of what I meant with coming with certain expectations. And when I say coming with expectation, I mean because I have said them, I've verbalized them, I've told people, I don't feel confident in what I'm doing right now. I want to improve at it. Tell me how to do that. Always asking for feedback. Because if you're always asking for feedback, you don't have to worry about whether or not you're doing a good job. Because unless people are lying to you, which is obviously could be happening, but I don't believe that to be the case here, even though my brain desperately wants it to be true, I do not believe that they are lying to me. So I do believe I'm doing a good job, even though in the moment, it feels like I'm drowning. But as soon as I get back behind the code, I feel better again. So it's kind of one of those things where, like, if I have to think, if I have to use this tool in my head, then things can go either great or poorly. But before I forget, you know, there's a reason why ADHD people excel so well in the final moments, right? There's a scientific reason.
That dopamine kick of the pressure of a looming deadline gives you that adrenaline rush and that dopamine kick, and that we're always seeking the dopamine, right?
You are so close. So close. But wrong neurotransmitter.
Okay.
It's cortisol. So ADHD people have dysregulation of cortisol, of your neurotransmitters in general. Ours are not where they're supposed to be, generally low. When you get really stressed, your cortisol levels get really high. And then all of a sudden, that translates to us as focus. And so all of a sudden, like, we are stressing ourselves out so much that our body has produced so much of this stress hormone that literally has no benefit in our modern age, but it has produced so much of the stress hormone that our brain is actually starting to work correctly. It's really not good for you.
No, it's not. Cortisol is the stress hormone. That's the thing that, I mean,
yes.
High levels of cortisol are attributed to under and overweight people because you have different reactions to it. Some people overeat and retain a lot of weight because of it. And some people are just like never hungry and just skinny twigs because of it. I know that cortisol is also what kind of regulates our circadian rhythm.
Yep.
Cortisol is high in the morning. It's kind of what wakes us up and get us out of bed. And as soon as you said, well, we typically have lower cortisol, it made me think about something that I was reading not too long ago about how ADHD people tend to have a different circadian rhythm than most people. And we generally wake up a lot later, but we're also more productive at night than a lot of
neurotypical.
Neurotypical. There you go. I never remember the words. And that just like was another, hey, yeah, ADHD. And it's amazing how finding out you have ADHD is like, well, great. That didn't solve anything. But the moment you are like, no, I actually have this thing, and you start looking at it, you're like, this explains so much. I'm not just a crazy person. There's a reason behind all of this. And the moment you can start understanding it, I feel like you can start hacking it to a degree. I know that there was a whole thing about ADHD as a superpower, and then kind of people were like, well, no, it's not a superpower. It's actually horrible. And I almost argue that, well, yeah, that's why it's a superpower. If you read comic books, like, no one with a superpower gets it and is just magically like, everything's better. Superpowers are a struggle. You have to learn how to use them to their advantage. Like, Superman is the most powerful being, but he's got this huge kryptonite weakness. And, you know, Spider-Man had to deal with his powers and learn how to do them all on his own. And he's in high school and learning to balance. Like, yeah, it is a superpower. If we can figure out how to activate our hyperfocus on the right thing at the right time, holy crap, that's amazing. Unfortunately, we have very little control over when we hyperfocus.
Well, yeah, because the tail end of that cortisol conversation is that not only is it lower normally, whenever we do get stressed out, it gets higher than most people.
Mm.
I've thought about that conversation of like, is ADHD a superpower? But whenever that phrase is uttered, like I have like this visceral reaction because to me, ADHD is the worst curse I could possibly have. It makes me miserable. But at the same time, there are things that I can do because I have ADHD that other people cannot do, which have made me excel in several areas, apparently the important ones, some of them. But it also comes with massive, massive side effects. So all gas, no brakes, baby.
Yeah.
Let's hit the pavement. Sometimes it's firing.
It actually, it's sort of what you're saying about that trust in your team and that, I guess, faith that like your teammate has your back. Like that's an important teammate skill and team component for any team. But I think that it goes back to something we talked a little bit about in the first episode where like people have to know that we have ADHD in order to work with us because they have to understand why I'm up at 2 a.m. getting everything under the sun done. And then 2 days later, like you won't hear from me and I got nothing done in an 8-hour span. I got everything done in an hour or nothing done in 8. You have to know and understand that about me in order to work with me effectively. And I think we talked about it in our first episode together, but it's so important to a good working relationship that everyone's on the same page.
Yep. I've been beating on that drum for a while. Also just to remind myself, but like not an hour ago, I messaged my partner in crime and I said, hey, you know, some days you wake up and you just know it's gonna be one of those days.
Yep.
And she is in our club. So she's like, yep, I know exactly what you mean. And sometimes she does things where I'm like, yep, don't worry. You're talking to the person with the utmost empathy for what you are saying to me right now. Do your thing. Because you're right. One day I'll get on, one day she'll get on. We'll knock out 4 days worth of work in like 2 or 3 hours if we're doing it together even faster. And it's like, oh, well, I guess, you know, I didn't really do much that one day, but today I did 3 days worth of work.
Speaking of your partner in crime and ADHD folks and still getting stuff done, Ruby for All has been awesome. I've been very much enjoying it. Julie has very much come into her own. She sounds extremely confident on every episode. I tell her that all the time and she never believes me, but such is, I think, an ADHD thing or just a low confidence thing, but she's doing a great job. You both are, but like, I know that you both have ADHD. So how do you guys manage to consistently put out episodes pretty much every week and they're good? Because I would never be.
Well, thank you for saying that. I had like a very similar conversation with Julie that I had with my partner recently on this project, which is something I've been talking about, of like, just be honest and straightforward with people. Because like for me personally, I don't read well into situations. I don't pick up hints unless they're literally hitting me in the head. If you're like in a weird mood, I'm just gonna be like, oh, they're in a weird mood and move on with my day. Meanwhile, maybe I've done something to like really like hurt your feelings or something. I have no idea. At the beginning of the project with Julian, really the beginning of a lot of things I do in the past year, I'm like, here's the situation. If they don't already know who I am and how I am, I explain it. And I'm like, look, I'm gonna screw up and I'm gonna make mistakes. But at the end of the day, I have your back no matter what. No matter what happens. If we screw this up so badly and everyone sees it, like whether it's at work, whether it's podcast, whatever, I will be right there beside you. No one's going to talk bad about you behind your back if I'm in the room. I've got your back no matter what. And that's how we're doing Ruby for All. Every week, we both show up. Like one time I forgot to edit an episode or something and she jumped right on it and did it for me. And it was kind of one of those things where like I let her down in that instance. I didn't do it again. And it's also just this thing of like, if I stop and think, I know whatever I'm going through, whatever I'm facing, whatever I'm struggling with, I will figure it out. I always do. I will not only figure it out, I might even knock it out of the park. Who knows? We'll see. But I believe deep down inside, under all the layers of anxiety and fear, I truly believe that I can do it, no matter what it is, if I really want to, and if I put my mind to it. So that's how it is. You know, you just keep grinding and grinding and like, you're like, hey, one day it's just going to work, man. Like it's not working right now. It will work though. I know it will. It always does. And in the very beginning, free for all, I was like, did I make the right call? Because now I'm under all these obligations. I've got my arms full. I have so much I need to do. Now I have to do more responsibilities at work, more this, more that. I'm like, I took on too much. I screwed up. And I'm very happy that I stuck with Ruby for All and that we're going to keep sticking with it.
I'm happy you're going to stick with it too, because I think it's a great podcast. I think you two work very well together too, because you have a lot of knowledge and she is very good at asking questions in a way that forces you to break down things. I mean, also mad props to you for like not being afraid to be like, I don't know, let me look it up real fast, or saying something, then being like, actually, I think that's wrong. Hold on. Like that's a skill in and of itself to be able to say, I don't actually know it well enough to explain it adequately. So let's like learn about it together. And I think that's a big thing that she brings to the table when it comes to interviewing folks, is that she is like, I refuse to shy away from asking questions, no matter how quote unquote dumb they sound, because there are no dumb sounding questions in reality, but like takes a lot of guts to be able to ask a question that there's a part of you that feels like, I hope this isn't a dumb question.
I hope truly that I had even like the most minuscule impact on her getting better at that, because very early on, I was like picking that up and I was like, look, I am never going to think that you're dumb. I'm never going to belittle something you say to me. I'm never going to look at you like you're an idiot. And I want you to ask any question you have, because that's how I did it.
Yep.
I am the question asker. The reason why I'm so comfortable doing this right now, that's how I've got here in my career, is being willing, and not only willing, but like eager to be the youngest, the most inexperienced, the most this, the most that person in the room, so that I'm not bored, first off. But second off, it worked out really, really good for me, because I'm not afraid to be like, yeah, I have no idea what's going on here. I'm not afraid to be like, I might be an idiot right now. I'm not getting it. But I feel like that's way, way better than the opposite, because what if you're like screwing up something important and like no one knows about it? And it's only going to get compounding and getting worse for everyone. I don't know, straight up front, just I'm like, look, I am what I am. I am who I am. I'm never going to change. And so I might as well just be who I am. Like you're going to get like what you get with me all the time. That's what it is. I am what you see.
So on to blockers, because you gave a lot of good things that you're working on. And I feel like we dipped our toes in the blockers water. But if you had to zero in on one or two, what are the things that are blocking you right now?
Paul, get your bleep finger ready. There's only one motherfucker on this earth that is blocking me from doing anything. And that is that motherfucker in the mirror, dude. I am my own worst enemy. And not only that, I am self-destructive. I don't know, man. It's like every day I wake up and I'm like, why did I do that thing? I knew that wasn't going to help me. And why did I do this? And why did I do that? And I had all this stuff to do and I knew that. And it feels like I live in shame almost. And so whenever I don't feel that, whenever I get like this sudden burst of energy, like the ADHD turns the other way and it's like, hey, let's go this way because the way is getting kind of dark. Let's go back the other way. All of a sudden, I'm in like the happiest I've ever been. Like I feel so focused. I'm in the mood. I'm like in the zone. I'm like going at late at night, figuring out things that I don't need to know, but are super fun. And I'm having a blast. And that leads straight back into the self-destructive part, because if I feel that way, I'm not going to go to sleep, because everyone says, well, it's going to be there when you wake up the next morning. But I know it won't be. That feeling, that mood, it's not coming back for a while. And so I'm like, I have to hold onto it as long as I can, because that's how I derive happiness. Those moments, those times, those feelings, that's when I feel the most me. And I'm like, if I let that go, like, it's just sad. So I'm like, I need to hold on to it as long as I can, which leads to more bad decisions, more cycle, more looping. But, you know, for those moments, for those hours, for those days, when I am like that, when I'm in the zone and I'm really having a blast and I'm figuring stuff out and I'm doing things and I'm making stuff, it feels worth it.
I have nothing but empathy and compassion for everything you just said. It is a constant battle. That whole concept of self-care, it's like, yeah, that's great, but the people who are talking about self-care don't have to deal with the fact that they only get certain amount of times of the day or of the week where they're productive as everyone else. And I have to try and balance it because I'm expected to show up every day, and because there are people who wait in a pair with me, or there's household chores and my girlfriend's coming home after work and she's like, why didn't you empty the dishwasher today? I'm like, because I cleaned the whole basement, I guess. I did something. She's starting to figure out, like, oh, I just have to celebrate whatever thing he won on. It was not the thing I wanted him to work on, but he got something done. And like, that's a huge help, is like being able to celebrate a win, even if it wasn't the win you were supposed to have. It's a huge help. But man, there are days where I'm just like beating myself up, like, God, just fold fucking laundry.
Just like almost on your knees, like, just like, why can't I do this?
I feel that blocker in my soul. And I've had more than a couple of guests, not just you, like come on and talk pretty openly about things they struggle with. And I think that the number one takeaway for anyone listening going, oh, I struggle too, is like being open and honest with your team and yourself and anyone in your close network, and finding something resembling a support structure. Even if it's like, sometimes my support structure is sending you a meme at like 11 p.m. because I saw something funny and I'm like, I just needed to share it with someone who will get it. And it just makes me feel better. Even if like you don't respond for 4 days, because if you message me, I'm probably not responding for 4 days. But
I was literally going to say, and then I see it 4 days later. I'm like, holy shit, that is really funny. And I like send you another one back, and then like, you know, another week goes by, and then you send me one. And I'm like, maybe I'll even look at it right then. I'm like, oh, that's funny. And I'll be like, anyway. And then I'm
it's
like,
little things.
5 days later, I'm like, wait, did I ever? It's been a while since Drew sent me a meme. What's going on here?
Yeah, I feel like the negative thing that has come out of the desire for people to not feel like I'm ignoring them has been the emoji reactions to things. Where I will emoji react to something just so that you know I saw it. I know I'm not responding to it right away because that is just not the way I work. And I don't want anyone thinking, and you're probably the only person who doesn't get emoji reactions, because I'm like, he will not think for a second I'm ignoring him. He will just know that I'm off in ADHD land. But like everyone else gets emoji reactions, and I'm like I like them because it is an easy way of acknowledging that I saw something. And it lets people know that I'm still there. But at the same time, they feel like this low effort response. And I'm like, you don't deserve this low effort response. I'm so sorry. But I don't know. I haven't found any other better way.
It sounds like the problem is you. It sounds like your emoji game is not really where it's supposed to be. Because like, there's a lot of thought that goes into my emojis. Like, I got to think. Sometimes I even go into the emoji encyclopedia, which is a real thing. Emojipedia.com, I think. And I'm like, what mood am I feeling? Let me try to translate it as close as I can to an emoji. Well, that's not working. Let me try this AI-powered emoji picker. This one's a little better. And I'm like, we're sending a meme. It's a GIF. We're sending a GIF. You know what? Never mind. We're sending a poem. I'm going to write a haiku. Let's go.
All right. We have to at least acknowledge that you hit the nail on the head. The problem is me.
The problem's me too. like when you said emoji reaction, my first thought was in text messages. I'm okay about Slack. It's like texting that's pretty bad. You think I take a long time to respond to you? How do you think my mom feels, dude? Because, but here's the thing. I come from a place of trauma, dude. If I send an emoji reaction to my mom to be like, hey, I saw this, but I'm doing stuff, so I'm not gonna respond right now because I'm an adult and I have a life. She might call me. Or she, you know, or she might say, hey, I see that you're there. Why aren't you responding to me? Which is like actually what puts me into fight or flight mode where I'm like, oh my God, either I'm going to snap right now. This is it. Just right there. Or I've got to get away from this person for like,
oh my God. You know?
It's like when I don't want to talk, I don't want to talk. If I do want to talk, then you're also not in luck because I won't shut up. But yeah, I feel you on the response thing.
That is a pro tip for all the neurotypical people that might listen to this podcast. If you have a neurodivergent friend who responds with emojis to texts, do not call them unless you are trying to give them a panic attack. All right, we are coming up on time, so I don't want to forget to do the last thing. Something new, cool, exciting that you want to share.
Hey man, you know me, I'm never short of new stuff. Where do I even want to start? All right. Well, 0.17.0 ES Build is a fundamentally breaking change to the way the dev server works in ES Build. So I was learning a little bit about that, not because it's a problem for us personally, but because I'm like, well, we're going to have to fix this. So I might as well learn how ES Build works again so that I can do this. ES Build has this new like output file you can create that you can put into like some visualizer that they built, and you can see all the graphs and the stuff that are helpful for some people, I'm sure, but they're not helpful to me. I just like the pretty colors, so I always make them. So that's that. Was learning a bit about that. Learned a little bit more about web mentions, which are an interesting web standard that most people have never heard of. And whenever I bring it up to Jason, he shakes his head and rolls his eyes. But yeah, they're pretty cool.
What are web mentions? Now, you said they're pretty cool. You got to give us at least a teaser trailer.
I think they're kind of cool. They're not new by any means. So if you're like an OG on the web, then you definitely know what I'm talking about. You're like, dude, back Monday. Anyway, I've just found out about this. But because of the way the whole internet kind of splintered like a weird way, like my community kind of like splintered a little bit when Twitter was changing a few weeks or months back. Since then, the majority of the people are back on Twitter. As I said, as expected, who cares? Some of them aren't tweeting, but I know you're there. But some people are staying on Mastodon. Now, there are a few people who I'm like, yo, I like go on Twitter and I look for this person's tweet specifically. And now they're not here. And that pisses me off because there's no Mastodon app and this and that. Now there's a really good Mastodon app I found literally today.
Okay.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm responding to people's like string 32 encoding questions in the Ruby community. Anyway, but because of that, and also because of the bigger push into the type of like format that they are using for like these feeds, the feeds that can like almost be ubiquitous, attached to that is a web mention, which is a reply or a like of something, of a URL, because everything on the web is URL based. So I like your blog post. How does one do that? Well, if you have a database and a server or a serverless function or JavaScript or something, you know, you can save that data in a database. You can maybe save it as a stat, like send like GitHub workflow dispatch and update it in your repository like that. But what if your website just knew on that page what had liked it, and it could get references to the things that had liked it, and thus so the people who are behind those events. That is what a web mention is. A web mention is basically a comment list and reactions list. It's like a GitHub issue editor in the web that you just have to assemble yourself, but the pieces are there. And there are ways to basically say, okay, whenever I write a new blog post, I publish it to Twitter, and then I publish it to Mastodon, and then I publish it here. Now, all of those locations have a link to my resource. And now any liking of that link on those websites, any likes on the tweet where I tweet the link, any likes on the whatever it's called in Mastodon when I do that thing, any replies to it on either of those platforms are replies, comments, and likes of my page, my resource, my URL. And I can get access to them and display them as such.
That is actually really interesting. How does it store that?
Very interesting, right? It's just a web standard, right? Okay. So there's no web database storing all of these. So it's up to people to implement these standards in however they see fit. There are a few people specifically in the indie web community, which is a really cool community. If you've never heard or checked it out, very cool, in my opinion. This one person is specifically pioneering kind of like the web mention side of it. He's also a Rubyist. Shout out that guy for writing a lot of this stuff in Ruby. And so there are certain things like webmention.io, and then there's something called Bridgy. And those are two specific tools that you can use. Those are the two things if you're wanting to add web mentions to your blog and don't even know where to start. That's where you start. But then you start getting into this other idea of like, but my website knows who I am. My website is technically the only canonical source of me as I exist on the internet, because everything else I am renting. What if I could use my website to verify my identity, to be a login, so that I don't have to have a specific login for your website, because I can have any of these logins that are all listed in like the head or the meta or specified as such on my website, so that you know that these specific links that are in my meta tags or in my site somewhere, those are me. And so if I'm trying to sign in to your site with a third-party provider like Twitter or Mastodon, you know it's me, because the canonical source, the only thing on the internet that truly says who I am, is right there. And it's saying that this thing that I'm trying to sign in with is me. So I am me. That's indie auth. The indie web community is super cool. If you take nothing out of this conversation, just look up indie web and see what's going on in there. Because if, especially if you've been in the web for a long time, because there are people who are really trying to bring back the whimsy and the fun and the cool. I go on this person's website and I'm like, that's so freaking cool. It's not the greatest, sleekest, you know, sharpest, like this or that morphism design. It's just like quirky. It's them. And I remember it. And that's what I want.
Yeah, no, that is super cool. I will definitely gather some links on not just indie web, but like also the web standard of web mentions and all that, because that is some interesting stuff. And I do have an appreciation for this concept of bringing the internet back to individuals rather than, oh, if you're on the internet, it's got to be via Facebook or Twitter. That's how I'm on the internet. And rather having your own presence on the internet and then just kind of sharing yourself through these things instead. That is something that I remember a lot of and I would love to see brought back.
I was never here when that started. When I was a kid, I remember being my life goal to get an AIM account. And then finally I got my AIM account and I'm like, okay, but now I want Facebook, because I skipped all the way past MySpace. Like MySpace was never a thing for me. I had Facebook, dude. I was already in the dark era. So because I have only grown up on Web 2.0 straight up, I've never known this thing. But like the more and more I find it, the more and more I see people doing stuff in it, the cooler and cooler it becomes to the point of now where it's just these things that I'm saying, a lot of them are things like that I have, these are the concepts in my brain. My website is the canonical source of everything that I post on the internet, because it's the only thing that I own-ish. So because of that, I have added a timeline to my website. So I'm not like doing the posse of it, which is publish once, syndicate everywhere. So like I publish on my site and then it posts that to Twitter and it posts that to Mastodon, it posts that to Reddit. So it doesn't care what corner you're in, because everything gets it. I'm not quite at that level, but I am at the level of like, maybe Twitter isn't as permanent as I thought it was. And now that it's kind of back to being like not a big deal, I'm still like, but I still really like this idea of there are things that I want to like post that I don't want to put on Twitter. So literally, I think the description of this page is records of my daily thoughts and experiences that would otherwise be lost in the void of time or Twitter. I don't have Instagram anymore. I used to be really big in Instagram, and apparently I screwed up not keeping it because apparently that's how people my age communicate. But I take photos, especially now that I'm out here in Arizona, that like I want to put them somewhere, not because I necessarily want you to see them. So I want to see them. I want to see that. And what else do I want to see? Well, I don't remember all the open source projects I've contributed to. Like, it would be really cool if I'm like, I feel like I contributed that. Well, let me just go check my website because it has a list of all the contributions I've ever made. And it has a list of all the open source projects, and it has a list of all the articles I've ever written. And it has a list of this and this and this and this. And that's where you go to find me.
It's almost like a Andrew Mason changelog.
Yes, exactly. I almost named it changelog. I went through like a few changes in the name. I ended up with timeline because that seemed something like more ubiquitous, where I didn't want to use feed because like RSS feed, right? I don't want to get those mixed up. And then I like the one you just said, but I ended up with timeline. After seeing it on someone else, I like one person saw a timeline, like, that's it. That's what I want.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Yeah, it's just a timeline of everything going on. And that's an interesting idea too, as a way of capturing and then being able to link out if so desired.
Yeah. Last year, I think it was last year when I came on the show. Actually, I can tell you because it's on my website. I'm pretty sure I had not really changed position, as in I was still working on my website. Yeah. Still letting it drive me crazy. Still doing other cool stuff. Still not done with that damn website. And I thought this year I almost was going to be done, but I think I've been saying almost for like 2 years now. So I'm just going to say, you may never, ever see it, but I see it. I think it's freaking cool. I'm having a blast building it. Sometimes I let it drive me insane, but at the end of the day, I learn a lot. So you may never, ever see this website that I keep saying I'm going to release one day. At this point, I might just be lying to myself. I don't care at this point, because at this point, I've just let it drive me way too over the edge. I'm just whatever. This is a thing that I work on when I want to have fun.
There you go.
And it will probably never see the light of day, but I don't care.
Doesn't matter. Those are the best projects. The ones that you're just like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm having fun. I don't think this will see the light of day, but I'm having fun. Doesn't matter. Having fun.
Exactly. But if I do end up ever releasing it, I have like 2 or 3 years of blog posts that are just sitting in a queue.
Jeez.
That's the only reason I keep saying like, I need to finish this damn website, because I'm not going to post them on the current one. I'm just not going to do it. Don't ask me why. There is no reason why. You literally will need a doctorate to figure out why. I don't know. But I have a lot of content that I want to share, all of it. I want to share everything, but I want to share it on my terms.
And that's how it should be.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, much like the last episode, I will give you an opportunity to wrap up by sharing all the numerous ways folks can find you on the internet. I know you listed a couple of them in the intro as far as the podcasts and the newsletter, but if you just want to give a rundown, and I will include it all in the show notes.
Yep. Well, if I do ever publish this website, all of these links would be on there, but not that you'll ever see it, but just know that I put them there. So there
you go.
You can find me on the internet on my website at andrewm.codes. My moniker on all social media sites that I want you to find me on is at andrewmcodes, which I also have a list of everything of that on my website. But like I said, you're never going to see it, so why do I keep telling you? And then you can come catch Remote Ruby, which is a podcast by Chris Oliver, Jason Charnes, and myself. We get to interview really cool people like DHH and Derek Sivers and the people who work on Hanami and the people who work on Elixir, the people who work on Rails and Ruby committers, and super cool people. And you can also find me on Ruby for All, which is a podcast I host with Julie J. And we are mainly focused on early career devs, but I've also found that we have another smaller niche of senior experienced devs who are like kind of in the managerial track, if not already in the managerial area, where they have juniors that either are on their team, potentially coming on their team, maybe they're looking to level up into leadership. Apparently, that's the other big niche we have, because I hear from both sides. I hear from the juniors and I hear from like the developer managers who are like, yeah, I mean, it's good to see like what's going on, like get an insight into like what juniors are struggling with, the ways I can improve as a manager. So that's what we're trying to do over there. Basically, And Ruby Radar, which is a newsletter I do with Colin Gilbert every Sunday. It's like a morning newspaper. We drop it on your email doorstep and then we hitch off until next week. And it's got all of the things that we think you should know that happened the week prior across different types of mediums. And so, yeah, basically I just kind of create Ruby content and then I kind of build projects that I don't ever ship and play Call of Duty. That's it. That's me.
There you go. That's Andrew Mason in a nutshell, everyone. Well, Andrew, as always, it was a blast having you on. I enjoy our chats immensely, especially when they go down the wacky ADHD roads.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for coming on. I am thrilled that we've gone full circle. You were my first episode, and it's been basically a year since you were on, and like clockwork, we had you back on. So hopefully it won't be a year before we have you back on, but you definitely have started the trend of repeat guests for Code and the Code and Coders Who Code It. For all the listeners, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all of you. Love you all. See you guys in 2 weeks.
And I love you too. More.
Fight me.